right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we've got a good one to get into because this one is out there. We are talking about Yorgos Lanthimos's Poor Things, starring Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Mark Ruffalo, Rami Youssef. This movie, I am so excited to talk about it. Joining me for this one is Josie DeMarco. She's been on the show before. We have a great conversation, lots of great puzzle pieces to get into, lots of little side tangents to get into, all kinds of stuff to talk about with this movie. So that's coming up in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow us on social media at PiecingPod. And don't forget to join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. This movie came out in 2023, and it did come up on our top 10 of 2023 episode, but I'm really excited to finally get to a full episode on the film. So let's get into our conversation about Poor Things. All right, I'm here with Josie DeMarco to talk about Poor Things. I am so excited to talk about this one, Josie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I just want to say right off the bat, this is the best movie I've seen all season.
Nice.
And it's surreal. It's visionary, unique, original, surprisingly sweet and inspiring. And as an autistic woman, I don't know if you knew this about me, but I'm on the autism spectrum.
Okay.
I can relate a lot to Bella Baxter, minus the sex part, obviously, but like, you know, like her mental age is younger. I've always felt younger. And like, also like, so, like a trademark of some autistic people say like have no filter. And like, also like her like curiosity I can relate to as an autistic person. And like, also her love of books.
Yeah.
And like, this is a great film, like, for the autism community, I think.
That is really cool. And I'm really glad you're, you know, bringing that up and sharing that, because, like, I do think that has to be a big part of the draw for making a movie like this. Like, you know, obviously Emma Stone is going all out with this, you know, with this performance, but she also produced the movie and is clearly hand in hand with Yorgos Lanthimos in making this, as well as with the writer, Tony McNamara.
Oh, yeah.
You told me beforehand, did you read the book?
I did.
So was any of that there in the book?
It's okay. Here's the thing. The book, it's similar in plot, but it's much different as far as story and like, emotion. Like Bella is more of a, because in the book, it's more so like other people's perspective of Bella, whereas in the movie, it's through her point of view.
Sure.
And like, back to what I was saying with like, really to the autism angle.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people on the spectrum, like their senses are heightened or like they're extra sensory sensitive. And so like we see like through the way the movie is filmed, like how Bella like senses the world around her and like the images.
Yeah. I think that's going to come up in a lot of puzzle pieces as well, because like that is a major thing of placing you in that point of view of this very unique character. And I think there's so much to that.
And like, you know, a very sad stat is that 9 out of 10 women on the spectrum experience sexual violence. Luckily, I'm not one of them. Thank God. And like in the film, obviously she's taken advantage of by Mark Ruffalo because he knows like that innocence, that like naivety to her like special needs aspect of her. And he takes advantage of that as well as some other people in the film. And that sadly happens in real life.
Yeah.
You know, we may not want to admit there has been a lot of progress made for individuals with special needs, but of course there's a lot more to go. And anyway, this film is like really, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but in a way, kind of like an allegory of like the autism experience in a way. And it's interesting, as someone on the spectrum, I've always gravitated more towards characters who are like accidentally autistic. Like, who weren't intended to be written as autistic, but, like, a lot of this people
interesting
can relate to.
Yeah,
kind of like a lot of autistic kids like SpongeBob because like he sure. has no filter, like I said. Mm-hmm. And like another example, Luffy from One Piece or Bella Baxter. And like I saw a couple of other tweets and like in social media comments by autistic people saying, "Oh my god, I see myself so much in Bella."
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, that's interesting. One other like little tangent before we like jump into puzzle pieces here. I did see like an article, I think it was a Vulture, about like, you know, is this the female experience that we want to see represented in a movie? And like, I don't think this movie is trying to tell just the female experience. Like you're talking about the autistic experience from this character's point of view. I think there's a lot more to this than just like, oh, this is a woman in the world. I think that this is...
Yeah, I think that's a very superficial way of looking at it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that there's a lot more to this character and this journey.
With Frankenstein monster-esque, you know, like special needs, people being viewed as like other non-human.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's there's a lot to it, but we're going to get into a lot of that along the way. Let's just get into puzzle pieces.
All right, my first piece is Frankenhooker from 1990, directed by Frank Henenlotter. So Jeffrey is a mad scientist and med school dropout. In fact, he's been kicked out of quite a bit of schools in New Jersey. He's in New Jersey, and Elizabeth, his wife-to-be, is run over by a lawnmower on her birthday. And assembling her body parts, as well as the body parts of dead prostitutes, he brings her back to life. It is completely ridiculous, but worth the watch. Jeffrey is a total scumbag, and you actually side with Elizabeth.
Yeah.
So, not to spoil, but Jeffrey gets his comeuppance. And the way the prostitutes die in this movie with the explosion is hilarious. Their body parts falling over.
I am so excited to revisit this. I wanted to revisit it before this conversation because I had a feeling you might bring this one up. I'll get another chance next month.
Her neck, it's like,
it's amazing. It's
it
amazing.
Looks just like
I haven't seen it in like 20 years or something. I can't wait to rewatch it. I'll get to rewatch it before Lisa Frankenstein next month, actually.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come up again then. But yeah, what a great piece. And I saw it, like I said, I haven't seen it in like 20 years or something, but I saw some people on Twitter posting some side-by-sides of some of the shots and like, it's perfect. It is great. And,
yes.
Great puzzle piece to kick this thing off with. I love it. I love it.
I don't know if it's. I think it's on Shudder.
Is it? Okay.
It might be.
I'm gonna definitely be watching.
All right. What's
that
your
soon.
First piece?
My first piece is The Wizard of Oz. I think we're talking about that point of view. The first of all, I mean, of course, you know, going in The Wizard of Oz from black and white into full color once.
That's a great comparison.
Once she goes out into the world, and then everything is through this character's eyes, and everything from the production design to the characters, the world. It's almost like a funhouse mirror distorted point of view of the main character. And
yes.
The music, the set design, the effects.
And their hero's journeys. They follow the hero's journey arc.
Absolutely, absolutely. And she meets so many like interesting characters along the way, and that is exactly what happens with Bella Baxter and her very unique journey as she goes out into the world.
Fun fact, I played Dorothy in a production of The Wizard of Oz.
Nice. How did that come out? That must have been a fun one to undertake.
It sure was.
No, I bet. There's a lot to that character. But Wizard of Oz, Frankenhooker, we're off to a good start already. What do you have for your next piece?
My next piece, I actually have three animated movies on my list, and this is the first one I'm about to talk about. Belladonna of Sadness, an anime film, a Japanese animated film from 1973, directed by Aichi Yamamoto. I could be pronouncing the name wrong, but... Mm-hmm. This is a Japanese adult animated film set in medieval France. A peasant girl named Jeanne, it's spelled like J-E-A-N-N-E, and a farmer named Jean fall in love. They get married. Jean gets horrifically gang-raped by the village baron and his fellow courtiers in a ritual called Droit du Seigneur, also known as Prima Nocta or Rite of the Lord. this was basically a purge night for the medieval feudal lords when they had the right to force sex upon any woman they chose. And so Jean begins having hallucinations that propel her to make a pact with the devil to take vengeance upon her attackers. And she delves into witchcraft. Again, this is a case of the patriarchy controlling the sexuality of women. It's trippy with highly erotic imagery, a devastating explicit feast of the eyes, but it's very thought-provoking for its time. Brilliant, like, innovative animation for that time period. It's a very hard film to find, as you can imagine why. If you have Canopy, I think it's still on Canopy. But yeah, Belladonna of Sadness is a beautiful movie. Touches on sexual liberty and autonomy of women.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I brought it up, though, and the animation looks amazing. I definitely want to watch this. It sounds very heavy and very dark. But yeah, I definitely need to check this out. I'll have to see if it's still on Canopy, like you said. But it sounds like a really interesting one. So I'm glad you brought it up here. I will go with You Won't Be Alone, a movie from 2022, just a couple of years ago.
Is that the movie with Amanda Seyfried and Ethan Hawke?
No, this is with Noomi Rapace.
I'm thinking of another thing. I'm thinking of something else, a different
one. Okay. Yeah, no, this one, she's not even in it that much. Like, she's on the cover and she's like promoted as like the main star, but really she doesn't even come in for like an hour into the movie. But essentially what's happening, it's very like Terrence Malick style film where basically this witch has been cursed for her soul to live out.
So I brought up a witch movie, you wrote another witch.
That's why I was like, I got to go to this one next. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah, her soul is like continuously being transported into new bodies, and she has to keep experiencing life through different eyes. And as we find in like the opening of Poor Things, you know, this was another person at some point who, you know, for reasons we'll probably get into at some point, we always get into spoilers here, you know, has tried to kill herself, and now she ends up as this new person, and she's experiencing the world, and both characters are very hungry to learn about the world and to get these opportunities to see the world through these fresh eyes. And that is a very like strange but like kind of lyrical film that like unfolds in ways that you just don't expect as it goes on, and is a really cool movie. And for people who haven't seen it,
I like Noomi Rapace.
Yeah, she's great. She's really good at it.
It sounds almost folklorish.
It is. It very much is. And I think you'd probably like it a lot.
Yeah, sounds. My next, and this is another animated film, Blood, Tea, and Red String from 2006. It's stop motion, directed by Christian Kvesk. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but it's spelled like C-E-V-G-V-A-S-K-E. So another feminist fairy tale, also got very gothic. I consider it much more gothic. So there's a class warfare between the aristocratic mite Weiss. The white aristocratic white mice and the creatures who dwell under the oak. And the creatures under the oak are more provincial and peasant-like, whereas, of course, the white mice are the rich ones. And the aristocratic mice task the dwelling creatures to design a doll. And then after making her, the creatures form an attachment to the doll, and they're resistant to handing her over to the mice. And after then the mice steal the doll one night, and the creatures who dwell under the oak embark on a fantastical adventure to retrieve the doll. The astounding stop motion and sets here is an achievement of filmmaking. There's no dialogue, so the storytelling is all through the movement of the critters and the imagery. And such direction takes a heavy degree of difficulty. Not to mention, it took the director 13 years to make this.
Wow.
And every hour of effort she put into this film is visible on screen. It's available to watch on YouTube and Tubi. And there's a great essay from Fangoria Magazine about the film from film historian Alexandra Heller Nicholas. She says, "But it's the floppy doll herself who lies at the heart of the film, the objectified female commodity to be stolen, fought over, defended, and died for. In an animated film, the central figure is so explicitly lifeless in a remarkable creative decision, existing as she does almost equally lifeless creatures that Kvasth's jaw-dropping skills as an animator have brought to life. Trapped in lifelessness, it's hard to miss the film's feminist agenda on this front, where a woman-shaped bag of cloth becomes the quarry in such a heated battle between dueling factions. And they all dream of her coming to life, pretending in multiple ways that she is a real girl and not just some old fabric and soft cotton wadding.
Wow. That's that it sounds so good. You know what? I'm remembering as you're describing this movie, I think this came up on our episode of Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio as a puzzle piece. And I need to see this. This is another one, as far as animation is concerned, that I have not seen, but that looks incredible. The stop motion in this is just absolutely beautiful. And as far as it as like a puzzle piece here, I mean, and like such a uniquely fantastical feminist story, like, I think it's a really interesting one to bring up. So this sounds like a great one to include here on the list. I love that. I will go with another fairly recent movie, Crimes of the Future from David Cronenberg.
I haven't seen that yet, actually, but I've, you know, I know of it, but I missed out on it last year, but I'll get around to it one of these days. But like, I do know from like the trailer about that line, surgery is the new sex.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, nothing sexier than becoming a doctor and doing surgery with your husband.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That is Bella Baxter. She is she's got it all by the end of this.
The general is after like being, you know, with the goat brain, in a way is kind of like the surgery that they perform, you know, the Max and Bella, and then you know, the new person that is formerly Alfie, goat person. It's like their offspring from surgery being their sex.
Their weird little family. Absolutely.
Yep. And now the Bride of Frankenstein and Doogie Howser can live happily ever after with their mutated freak children.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That little house full of wonders. Absolutely. I also wanted to mention with Crimes of the Future, the Willem Dafoe's character, he's so funny in this movie, but he can't produce gastric like juices or something. And so he has this machine and he has to burp out these bubbles. And it's
like just, Willy Wonka.
It's so gross. And that's part of the comparison to Crimes of the Future, because Crimes of the Future imagines a very gross future of science and strange like technological advancements. And so all the grossness of that reminded me
a
lot of that.
If AI tries to replace doctors, I can only imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It works, but it's also disgusting. That's where AI would take us. What do you got next?
Speaking of disgusting, my next piece is May from 2002, directed by Lucky McKee.
Nice.
The story follows our titular character, an offbeat veterinary assistant, misfit woman with a lazy eye, and she played by Angela Bettis, who gives a really great performance in this, and said her career never took like off from that.
Yeah.
So she underwent a troubled childhood because of her condition. Her only companion is a doll, back to dolls again. And although her eyes are later fixed in adulthood, she still has a lot of trouble with socialization. May meets and starts liking a mechanic named Adam, who has an obsession with car reparation. And so he's drawn to her oddities, but then, you know, she scares him away after biting his lip. I mean, he still like likes her, but like, you know, he's just appalled by her biting his lip. And and then Polly, a girl who works with May, likes her. Their relationship doesn't exactly go anywhere, though. And then it gets to a point where Molly is so emotionally unleveled that matters become violent. I only see parts and not their whole, you know. And then you know, the two films have motifs of outcasts and body parts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think May, as well as Frankenhooker, will come up next month on Lisa Frankenstein. But, you know, that is absolutely a great one to include here. And I was also thinking about May. It was one of my possible pieces here. So great one to include. I am going to go, you know what? You just mentioned AI, so I'm going to go with Ex Machina from Alex Garland, another movie about a female creation of science who is learning what it is to be a person, along with sexuality, the differences between men and women, and how interactions can be different between different kinds of people, and seeing the world through that fresh set of eyes, even though that creation takes on the form of an adult, basically. They're both movies that, of course, involve violence, they involve sex, they involve liberation, and you know, ultimately go in different directions. Even as weird as Poor Things is, ends up being much more of a happy story by the end. We were just talking about that lovely ending that she has. So they definitely end up in different directions, but where they start out come from kind of the same places.
Right. I've actually never seen Ex Machina, but with Alex Garland making a 28 Days Later sequel, I should finally get around to it.
It's so good.
My next piece is so Rami Youssef's character made me think of Polly Bleeker from Juno. can we just talk about how cute their relationship is?
He's a cutie pie.
I know it's weird to say, but like relationship and marriage goals, because it's like Max McCandless is like the dorky, sensitive guy she settles with rather than like a total jerk. He stands by her through her self-actualization journey. The way he cares about her is just so sweet.
Yeah.
And like, I thought it was like alone on this island thinking this. No, there are a lot of people who think that too. And like, it's like Mark Ruffalo and Willem Dafoe are both excellent here and are deserving of accolades. But I feel like Rami Youssef isn't getting enough credit, because, you know, like I said, he stands by her, or even if he's not physically present with her, through her self-actualization journey, and he gets the girl. I don't get it. Like, why he's not in the conversation more.
To that point, I think it might be because he's kind of the straight man of all this. You know, like, Mark Ruffalo is so big and so ridiculous, and Willem Dafoe is just the craziest character. And so, you know, he is just more of a straight man. Like, he doesn't get to be as big as the other two. And so I think that's why people are overlooking him.
And that is so hard to pull off.
Yeah.
And especially since it's his first movie role, and like, doing an English accent.
Yeah. Everyone's doing big accents in this movie. Mark Ruffalo's accent is the funniest thing in the world. But great one there with Juno. I love that. And yes, their relationship is just the best. It's great. I am going to go with, you know what? I'm going to go with The Island of Dr. Moreau for a puzzle piece. You're just talking about what happens to the general at the end, but the entire house is filled with little creatures that are like one animal stitched together with another animal and all kinds of stuff. The dog, duck, whatever.
You know what would be really funny? If Willem Dafoe's character got like mutated ducks for the bathtub.
Oh, I bet he does. We don't get to see all that. I want to see that part of the movie. Absolutely.
No, that'll be Max and Bella's next project.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that whole world of just all these science creations just living out in this big, beautiful house. You know, it's a little Dr. Moreau-ish in how weird it all is. But yeah, the chicken dog is the best, though. I want a chicken dog.
Yeah. When you say that, it almost sounds like food.
It does kind of sound like food. I want a chicken dog food also.
I don't think we have enough chicken dogs.
Dun, dun, dun. What do you have for your next piece?
All right. My next piece is a film from 1972 called... The Other Side of the Underneath, directed by Jane Arden. So a therapist, played by Jane Arden herself, examines a schizophrenic woman, and we see like surreal dream sequences, and that her madness is actually a result of suppressed sexuality and constrictions, and of taboo. And it criticizes societal standards placed upon women, similar to poor things, it deals with death and rebirth. And then there's a sequence later in the second half where the subject wanders outside, seeing people around her. I think she's at like a picnic or like some like outdoor festival. It reminded me of that.
That sounds really interesting.
That's streaming on Shudder. Side of the Underneath.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
Sadly, Jane Arden, her life was cut short. She committed suicide.
Hmm.
And she sadly, mental health problems. Mental health matters. And I don't mean to jump into my next piece so quickly, but would it be all right if I did that?
Yeah, go for it.
Speaking of mental health, my next puzzle piece is David and Lisa from 1962, directed by Frank Perry, written by his then wife, Eleanor Perry. And she also, this is also based on a play. I forget who wrote the play, but anyway, as far as women mentally younger than their chronological age and the guy helping her out, David and Lisa is a great comparison. In the film, David Clements, played by Kier Dullier, is a teenager under the delusional belief that if he physically touches somebody, that he will die. And then his mother sends him to a mental institution designed for young people suffering from such challenges. And then David meets a girl named Lisa, and she's dealing with a split personality. One persona speaks in rhyme, while the other is mute. This is a very sweet, tender love story ahead of its time and showcasing mental health struggles and how one can learn to overcome obstacles with them. Most of all, embracing whatever challenge you think you have as a superpower. And in Poor Things, Bella Baxter learns to embrace her oddities as unique superpowers.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like that sounds heavy, but like you're saying that it like goes in like a more sweeter direction as it goes on.
Yeah, David and Lisa, I think it's on, you can watch on YouTube. Like last time I checked it, I think it is on Tubi also. Mm-hmm. But you know, Frank Perry, he directed Mommy Dearest and The Swimmer. And he used to collaborate with his then wife, like writing his films. And yeah, David and Lisa is a really underrated movie. Definitely one of my favorite as well as on Other Side of the Underneath, one of my favorite movies set in a mental institution.
Yeah, yeah. Very, really interesting. Those both sound like really interesting movies. I'm going to have to check those out. Speaking of the mental health aspect, I'm actually going to go to Yorgos Lanthimos' own film, Dogtooth, from 2009.
Oh, yeah, the ending really gave me Dogtooth vibes.
Yeah, it seems like, and it also seems the other way around, like if Dogtooth hadn't been so insanely disturbing, maybe if it was a little bit of a lighter film, this could be what happens after those children go out into the real world after what their father has put them through in that movie. It's such a strange, disturbing movie. Poor Things, even though there's certainly dark ways to look at it, I think overall it's just a much lighter film than anything, maybe The Favorite, but anything else that Yorgos has done so far. And I think, The Favorite and this both being written by Tony McNamara, that probably, I think it balances out some of Yorgos's more out there, insane ideas.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So
this should win adapted screenplay.
Yeah, yeah,
100%.
I completely agree with you. I definitely think it should, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it does. It did pretty damn good at the Globes, and it's doing good at a lot of the other things. It's going to be interesting to see the Oscars this year.
Yeah, and like I mean, this movie, on paper, it sounds disgusting, but if you really look at it, it's basically like a coming of age adventure and like a best friends fall in love story where there's the hot girl and then the dorky guy wants her, but then there's this jerk who tries to take advantage of her and then wins her out over him.
Absolutely.
What this movie is. How is it not a crowd pleaser?
Absolutely. Speaking of which, did you see Emma Stone's Golden Globe speech when she won?
Yeah, I know I know that she said she called it a rom-com.
Yeah, she said it was like a rom-com between Bella Baxter and life.
Yes.
Not between her and any particular person. And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at it. I think it definitely fits. And there's certainly multiple ways to read the movie, but I thought that was a really interesting point of view.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So what do you have for your next piece?
My next piece is Anastasia. Long before Fox was bought by Disney, Fox and Fox had like a little animation studio. Mm-hmm. Fox had their own princess, Anastasia. And so Poor Things can be classified as sort of like a Pygmalion or My Fair Lady kind of story. And an animated film that fits that mold is Anastasia. So Anastasia, voiced by Meg Ryan, is the last living daughter of Tsar Nicholas II. In the beginning of the story, we see a ball. It's 1916 in St. Petersburg, Russia. Anastasia, at age 8, at this point in the movie, voiced by young Kirsten Dunst, is at the ball with her grandmother, Empress Maria. She gifts her with a music box along with a necklace with the words "Together in Paris." A villainous sorcerer, Rasputin, voiced by Christopher Lloyd, disrupts the ball. He announces his grand plan to terminate the Tsar's family, and Rasputin's revolutionary team invades the palace, and Marie and Anastasia begin their escape with the help from a boy named Dmitri, who's later voiced when older as by John Cusack. And so Marie makes the train, but Anastasia fails to jump on. She falls. Cut to 10 years later. Russia is governed under a communist regime. There are theories, which turn out to be true, that Anastasia is indeed alive. Maria basically offers a sweepstakes award for the finding of Anastasia. Dmitri, the boy who guided Anastasia and Maria to the train, is now a hustler. He's voiced, like I said, by John Cusack. He has a crime partner named Vlad, and the two have the goal of finding an Anastasia lookalike to receive money. And speaking of lookalikes, kind of like the lookalike, we lookalike with a tournament with using Margaret Qualley, as a replacement. Yeah. But she actually ends up becoming their second child. So it's revealed for the past decade, Anastasia lived in an orphanage. She experienced amnesia after the fall, so she doesn't remember her previous identity as Anastasia. So she goes by the name Anya, kind of like how, you know, Bella Baxter doesn't remember her previous life as Victoria Blessington.
Yeah, sure.
And by Anastasia's side is an adorable puppy dog. And then Dmitri and Vlad find Anastasia. They tell her they're going to bring her to her grandmother, not knowing that she actually is Anastasia. And then Anya and Dmitri fall in love. The animation is eye-popping gorgeous. I love Anastasia's green eyes and like the detail to the costumes. The drawing of the background scenery is transportive. And it's an animated movie that's classic that's not talked about nearly as much as it should. It's a great alternative like princess movie to show to girls. And like... like the trio of Anastasia, Dmitri, and Vlad sort of reminds me of Emma Stone, Rami Yusuf, and Willem Dafoe. This has the song, "Life is a road and I want to keep going. Love is a river, I want to keep going."
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember this movie. I haven't seen it since it came out, but... It is funny that you have three animated movies on this list. This movie does feel like a big fantastical, like it could have been an animated
thing. I actually was Anastasia for Halloween. And then I wore the costume again on Christmas. I wanted to have Halloween on Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I watched it with my mom on Christmas morning. And then I realized that like the villain Rasputin, literally the name Putin is in the name.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's funny. That is ridiculous. I will go with for another piece here. So this is funny. I actually brought this one up on our Fool's Paradise episode that Josie was on. But this is The Enigma of Caspar Hauser, the Werner Herzog film.
Still haven't watched it, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, it's really, really... interesting and weird, and it's great, but this strange man who has been kept in isolation and no one knows his history, and he doesn't know anything about the outside world or how to behave in the outside world or customs, and how to communicate with other people, and just kind of gets thrust out into the world with no kind of safety net, and goes out into the world and learns the ways of the world and just kind of ends up finding their way on an adventure. And that's exactly where Bella Baxter ends up, as she goes from city to city, from person to person, meeting all these people, learning about customs, learning about what the world is, both the good and the bad in it. And
babies, how did they
the poor babies.
I love the part where she takes his money and gives it away.
Oh my God, yeah.
With and then he's like gambling, like with a sour face. He probably, Mark Ruffalo's character, he'd probably be like at the OTB. He'd probably be part of like a fantasy football league. And like,
Mark Ruffalo's character is such a scumbag, but he is so
funny. He's perfect.
He's the best. I haven't seen him like this in years.
If Downey Jr. weren't winning the Oscar, he probably would. Would be
totally, but, totally.
But it's so funny. Like it's like he's a washed up Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Ooh, that's with, like, a good
beer with like a beer belly and like with a law. A law degree, but like it's probably like a, imagine if it's like not even legit, it's like a,
yeah,
like a Better Call Saul thing.
Yeah, just totally made up, and he's just skating by. That's totally something that this character would do. Even his name, Duncan Wedderburn,
his real name
sounds made up. Sounds totally made up.
Yeah, what like music could you see him listening to?
He seems like the kind of guy who like doesn't care about music. He literally only cares about his money and getting women and scheming people. Like, that's what I picture him.
No, he probably have like a, like those like scam sites. He probably like operate like credit card scams.
Oh yeah. That would be the Duncan Wedderburn of the 2020s for sure.
Yes. He probably have like cryptocurrency.
Oh God. Yeah. He'd definitely be one of those guys for sure. Oh, he's so good. What do you have for your next piece?
I want to talk about two stories by Nathaniel Hawthorne, Rappaccini's Daughter and Paradise of Children. I actually, right here, have from the library, collection of selected tales by Nathaniel Hawthorne. You know, Nathaniel Hawthorne really, you know, because Scarlet Letter and Easy A. But Nathaniel Hawthorne meant a bunch of other stuff that's very, one of the best writers of 19th century. So, Rappaccini's Daughter, Dr. Rappaccini creates a daughter from plants, and he has he names her Beatrice, alluding to like Dante and Beatrice. And then his assistant, kind of like poor things, falls in love with her. Although ultimately, it's doomed for them. It takes sort of like a Garden of Eden route.
Okay,
and it plays around with the idea of suppressing women and the idea of playing God. And then Paradise of Children is his take on Pandora's box story. And in the story, you know, Pandora opens the box and troubles come out. But what's interesting is that at the end of the Paradise of Children story, a fairy comes out of the box named Hope. And she says, with all these problems in the world, there's always hope, and that's something that Bella learned. So I figured that would be good to bring up. You know, me coming from a literary background and this film being, you know, literary, I'd sure bring that up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just want to go to, you know, the playing God aspect. Willem Dafoe's character being named Godwin and Bella constantly referring to him as God. It's so perfectly, like, perverse and weird that, like, you know, that would be what she's constantly calling him. It just seems like something he wants her to call him, but at the same time, it's just his name. I think that's just,
it's kind of, you know what, this is a weird comparison. It's kind of like To Kill a Mockingbird, how Scout calls, instead of her dad, she calls him Atticus, his first name. That's what it's sort of like.
Yeah, it's such strange interpersonal relationships between these people, and but yeah, no, those I haven't read either of those books, but those, you know,
they're short stories.
They're short stories. Okay, yeah, it sounds like great pieces though to include here. I'm gonna go with kind of a silly one here. I'm gonna go with so I was thinking about Bella Baxter's big dance sequence, which is really, really an amazing moment between her and Mark Ruffalo's character. You know, I was thinking a little bit about Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads concert film. David Byrne's dance movements are so, like, odd and kind of childlike and kind of out of this world in a way. And some of these like moves that they're doing as they dance really reminded me of that kind of like anything goes like interpretive dance kind of thing. You could also say in the beginning of the film, before Bella has really kind of developed her motor skills and she's still kind of like crawling around and moving strangely, you could kind of see some of that influence in that as well.
It's funny bring up David Byrne because David Byrne is autistic.
Oh yeah, that's actually, yeah, that's yep. True. So I think that that plays right into exactly the kind of point of view, I guess, of the way that the Bella Baxter character is kind of written and portrayed.
And back to the autism angle, the temper tantrum she has in the carriage when she wants to go outside, that is very similar to like, particularly like young autistic children, like what temper tantrums could be like that I've experienced myself younger. Mm.
Well, it's such an interesting character, and it's really interesting to hear about that, like that, you know, how much that kind of mirrors some people's experiences and, you know, for people on the autistic spectrum. But yeah, what do you have for your next piece?
Well, one film I thought of bringing up was Freeway, speaking of fairy tales.
I've actually never seen that.
It's like a take on like a Little Red Riding Hood with Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
And Kiefer Sutherland kidnapping her is kind of like Mark Ruffalo basically kidnapping Bella.
I always wanted to watch that movie. It looked really good, but
it's on Shudder.
Is it?
It's pretty okay. Fun. And then I wrote that. You said that sometimes you have, my last puzzle piece really is a playlist of songs that I think could connect.
Okay, cool.
Bring Me to Life by Evanescence. Wake me up inside. Like Evanescence. I could picture like Mystery Science Theater saying like, Evanescence, the Bride of Frankenstein tour. Wake me up inside.
Hell yeah.
Bring me to life. We're living a lie. There's nothing inside.
I think Bella would love that song. Absolutely.
It sums up. It relates to the movie. Bring me to life.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great one.
For the themes of sexuality, Strip by Adam Ant. Just following ancient history, will you strip for you, strip for me? Great song.
Classic, absolutely.
You know, the Portugal dance sequence, I don't know why, it makes me think of, well, the song Tripping Billies by Dave Matthews Band makes me think of that scene. I don't know why. You know, eat, drink, and be merry. I could see will die.
Ruffalo's little dance movements with his kicking his legs out. I could see that. So that song.
I could see him being a Dave Matthews fan.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, and more. And then songs that could describe Max's longing for Bella. You know, that song. Back here, baby.
Also, poor Max. Poor Max.
Yep. Slide by Goo Goo Dolls. Why don't you slide? Put your arms around me. What you feel is what you are. What you are is beautiful.
Great song.
Black Balloon, also by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Another great song.
I have to bring up Mr. Brightside by the Killers. Like, I like to imagine, like, Rami Yusuf's talking to Gerard Carmichael since they're friends. Like, imagine, like, he and Gerard Carmichael's characters in the movie were like friends. He's like going to him for advice. He's like, she's off with Duncan. And now they're going to bed and my stomach is sick and it's all in my head, but she's touching his chest now. He takes off her dress now.
And that chest is Mark Ruffalo. Oh,
yes. Or, oh, Everything You Want by Vertical Horizon. He is everything you want. He is everything you need. He is everything inside of you that you wish you could be.
This is a killer playlist. You need to make this playlist and then we'll add it in the show notes because these songs all are awesome.
Be Like That by Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
If I could be like that, I would give anything just to live one day.
Oh, yeah. Now, the only thing you're missing, do you have a Matchbox 20 song to tie this in with Barbie?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking a Real World. Since you wrote about me, found someone else.
There you go. There you go.
Also, the song You Learn by Alanis Morissette. You live, you learn. Kind of like Bella's journey.
Sure.
And then at the ending, when a Bride of Frankenstein and Doogie Howser and their mutant children live happily ever after. The song, since they're drinking champagne, Champagne Supernova by Oasis. Someday you will find me underneath the landslide in a champagne supernova in the sky.
I think the music video used a lot of fisheye lenses too. So I mean,
I think so.
That's awesome. So there you go. That brings it all home right there. I love it. Absolutely. That is a great playlist. Make that playlist on Spotify. We'll add it to the show notes. That's great. Lots of great stuff on there. Well, I think that is a good place to wrap up our puzzle pieces here. I will read down our list, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts. We talked about Frankenhooker, Wizard of Oz, Belladonna of Sadness, You Won't Be Alone, Blood Tea and Red String, Crimes of the Future, May, Ex Machina, Juno, The Island of Dr. Moreau, The Other Side of the Underneath, David and Lisa, Dogtooth, Anastasia, The Enigma of Casper Hauser, a few different short stories, Stop Making Sense, Freeway, and then we got a great little playlist in there, some songs that would fit in with Bella's journey. I think we got into so much different stuff here with Poor Things. Is there anything you wanted to mention that we didn't quite get into with puzzle pieces here?
Corpse Bride.
Ooh.
Another movie I considered putting on was, I didn't get time to watch it again, but it's called Frankenstein Created Woman.
And I've heard of that, yeah.
Similar to this, it has a woman who commits suicide and then is brought back to life.
Mm. I was also thinking about, I guess I'll just throw it in as one last puzzle piece for me. Working Girls, the Lizzie Borden Working Girls from 1987. We actually covered it over on Awesome Movie Year. But in that movie, it's basically set in a brothel, and all the prostitutes in between servicing various Johns, they kind of like chat about life and talk about the ridiculous requests of these men. And they're all kind of treated as like just these ridiculous idiots who have their kinks and weird oddities. And to the whole Paris section of Poor Things, I mean, these guys are all very strange. And, so it definitely made me think of that as well. But I think we got into so much different stuff here. I would just reiterate just how great all these performances are. They're all so damn good in this movie. Emma Stone, it's her crowning achievement, I think.
I think so too. Like, I think Best Actress is such a tight, like, this year is such a tight, tough call between Lily Gladstone, Emma Stone, and Sandra Hüller. But of those, as of today, I could change my mind depending on the day, but I think I'd give the edge to Emma Stone because it's the most it's such a difficult performance.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. It's brave. It's out there. It's unique. And there's not, like, even though we went through this whole list of a lot of very, strange movies, like, there's still not that much to, base that character on. And it's like, a really unique, original thing.
Yeah. And more special needs representation.
There you go. Absolutely. Great place to wrap this thing up on. Josie, is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Well, I could talk about I watch a lot of older things. If you look at on my letterbox, cause I don't, what I like to do is I work at a library. And so I rent a lot of, through interloans. And I rent a lot of older movies and like that aren't available on streaming. And recently, my first time watches of 2024 so far, some of them included Americanization of Emily, Akira Kurosawa's Dreams, David Lean's Passionate Friends, One False Move, Castle of Cagliostro, Lunatics: A Love Story, which is awesome, The Other Side of the Underneath, which I just mentioned, The Last Wave, and Lost Skeleton of the Cadaver.
That sounds interesting. But yeah, I remember you posted in our Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group about Lunatics: A Love Story. That's one that I've always wanted to watch. I'm going to have to get to that soon.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Ted Raimi, get Bruce Campbell and Ted Raimi to host an award show, please.
Oh, I'm super down for that. That would be any more Bruce Campbell in general. Absolutely. But Josie, where can people find you and your YouTube series?
Look up my name, Josephine DeMarco. And I am, you can also follow me on Twitter, and you can follow my Instagram, Positive Poems, where I write poetry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I'm glad we were finally able to do this one, and I'm sure we'll get you back again sometime.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, and some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Poor Things. Thank you to Josie for joining me on that one, and thank you to all you for listening. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, of course, make sure you are subscribed wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening right now. You could hit that follow or subscribe button and maybe drop us a little 5-star rating and review while you are at it. That helps make sure that all kinds of new people find the show and we get to do all kinds of fun new stuff, like all the live shows I've been doing, and we'll get into some more stuff this year. But definitely drop a little 5-star rating review. It'd be very helpful. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. I told you about that at the top of the show. What I didn't tell you about is our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where you can find bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there. So check it out if you want to support the show. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. I appreciate you just being out there listening, but if you want to check out the Patreon, it is there. And with that said, let's close this out with a piece of music like I always do. And this is kind of a tough one to pick one for. It's just such a strange movie, so it's kind of hard going through my albums trying to find a good piece to play here. I think what I'm going to do is go with a song that I really love from my 2020 album, the self-titled David Rosen. It's called The Night Calls, and I just think it has like a little bit of a strange vibe to it, and I think it'll fit pretty well here. So let's go with The Night Calls. I've always loved this song. I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together very soon. Thank you.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.